Blog Talk Radio.
As a non-commercial radio station, KENS FM survives in large part by the generosity of listeners like you, who value public radio and have become a member. Your donation continues to allow us to support local artists and musicians and play the music you want to hear, not what advertisers think we should play. It enables us to broadcast feature story news so you can hear the news, not opinions. Public radio doesn't have an agenda. We're not in the business of pushing our point of view. Our mission is simple. Reflect your interests, not the interests of some corporation. If you believe that having an independent, non-commercial, public radio station in your community is a good idea, become a member now. Find out how by visiting our website at www.kensfm.com. And remember, independence has a cost, and it's as little as $10 a month.
Here, right now, right live, and here we go. And we're waiting for the modern nightmare, Matthias, to arrive. Oh, he's there? How are you, sir? Good to have you.
Oh, you know, I'm ready for another great show on 89.1 FM.
You kind of snuck in on me. I think the director's there with us, too. Are you not, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, perfect. How you doing, man?
Oh, pretty good.
All right. Well, let's see. I got Matthias with us the whole show, and Scott will be here for the first hour. Then Big Swing will take over the second hour. So we got a fully impact, informative show today. We'll catch up everybody on what everybody is doing here in a little bit. However, let's see. Let's go over our guest list first. It's going to be a big show as always. We have Kelly Bishop. She'll be the first guest on the shoot. Then we have Donald Farmer, and then we have Debbie Dutch. She is the she's every teenage boy's dream, if you know what I mean, that used to watch Saturday on USA Up All Night. So she'll talk to us about that. In the meantime, let's catch up here. Matthias, you had a match this weekend.
As a matter of fact, I did. Yes, I was at Below Zero Wrestling's Wrestleversary 3 in the Mr. Wrestleversary Rumble match, basically. I competed against 9 other superstars for a chance at the any BCW title, anytime, anywhere of my choosing. And, yeah, we had a full crowd. We had a good crowd, full house. And, yeah, basically it was a tough match. 9 other people involved in that match. And, you know, the crowd was great. The event was great. And, you know, overall, it was a good time.
You know, I had a plan on attending to that, but, you know, I had a, you know, it was Mother's Day, so I couldn't talk my mom into going to a Mother's Day match, so I had to take her out to dinner instead.
Yeah, I know. The event was on Saturday, the day before, I had to, luckily, I could take the day off, and I went and did my match, and then the next day I celebrated Mother's Day with a few people, and then got to relax a little bit afterwards and kind of recuperate from the night before.
All right, that's awesome. Now, Director Scotty, what do you got going on, man? Scott, are you there? He was there, wasn't he? All right. Well, let's see what's going on with that.
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, you're actually early. You're actually Donald. You're actually up in 45 minutes. You want to stay on hold? Or you want to call back?
Yeah, I can call back in 45.
All right. I'll give you a 5-minute countdown. All right.
Okay.
All right, perfect. All right. So, well, that was our second guest. Scott should be calling in soon. I don't know if you knew this or not, Matthias, but, you know, Scott has got himself a job actually writing a couple of scripts for some people.
Oh, wow.
And being a writer instead of a director, you know, they expect you to be at the whatever, writing and creating, and, you know, they have deadlines for, you know, I guess you have to have this many pages done by this time, and then this many pages, this many, you know, it's kind of a fun little deal, but anyway, that should be fun. I can't wait to catch up with him. Our first guest, like I said, will be calling in about 10 minutes or so. But, you know, as we mentioned, you know, Sunday was Mother's Day, and we took my mom to Grand Forks to a local establishment out there. Me, my wife, and my mother went to a nice little establishment for a nice big buffet out there in Grand Forks. A great restaurant, by the way. I'll tell you what, Matthias, you know, you like, as a wrestler, you know, you have to do your protein and all this other stuff. But I'll tell you what, man, they had this chicken noodle soup there. The noodles were bigger than the bowls that they had to put the soup in. It's just amazing.
Interesting.
Yeah. You think that they grew the you figure they got these noodles? They were manifested under power lines or something, nuclear power, because they were that big, and it's awesome. And this particular restaurant, if you leave hungry from this particular restaurant, it's your own fault.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds like it. Yeah, absolutely. Especially from a buffet, you can never go wrong. You eat till you are absolutely full, and you know there's no way you can leave hungry unless you just don't want to get yourself sick. But you know you got to eat to that point almost.
Yeah. You know, without giving any. Names away, because they're obviously not advertising on the station. We don't get free stuff here, but do you have any favorite buffets around here?
Well, normally I actually do not go to buffets. I tend to stick around with my job and my traveling. I tend to get the quicker kind of stuff. I rarely ever go to a place where I can sit down and enjoy the experience because I'm constantly on the go. So... I mean, there are a couple places that I'll, like, you know, go sit and enjoy my time. There was one that I ate down by Walmart, and I had that at the, I had that during New Year's Eve. That was the last time I went there. I got a complimentary glass of champagne with that, so that was interesting.
Is that the one right across the street by,
Kroll's Diner.
Oh, across from Kroll's Diner. Okay.
Yep, across from the 13th Walmart.
That is my favorite buffet here in town. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah, that one was pretty good, and I guess, like I said, the champagne and stuff like that was kind of cool. But other than that, no, like I said, I tend to stick to the faster type of stuff. Not that I go and get, like, McDonald's or Wendy's or Burger King, but I tend to go get the nicer places, but where I can pick something up and grab it and hit the road.
So you're not one of those wrestlers. I guess it's kind of a myth. I guess you're not one of those wrestlers that takes three eggs out of the fridge, crack them, put them in an egg, mix them up, and joke them down.
I mean, if that's what I need for my daily protein intake, if I were to sleep in late and I need to get going, and that is my only option, then I will do that. Other than that, it's normally protein shakes, protein bars. Mixed in with a little smelling salts, and then I'm ready to go for the day. That's my quick wake up if I ever need it, is a quick sniff of the smelling salts.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I know you're familiar with Sting, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, Sting used to talk about how the protein, what he used to do is he used to take, you know, the chicken from the can and three eggs and blend them up and drink it down for breakfast.
I mean, that is a really good source of protein. Of course, you need to mix in a little bit of other stuff with that. You can't just go straight on protein. But, yeah, I mean, that is a very, very, very good, I mean, I guess more healthy source of protein, I would say. But, yeah, Sting was definitely one to have eggs and chicken in the morning. Shit up in a cup, and there you go.
And you know, I don't think I could ever do that. I mean, I love wrestling, you know that, but I don't think I could ever do protein that way. I'd rather just go have like a, I don't know, maybe, you know, something else other than that.
Well, one thing I do tend to always eat, and it is what I commonly eat, is I eat ribeye steak. I'm known to eat at least one ribeye a day. So I go to Walmart, and basically what my protein goes into is a lot of steak, a lot of meat. Like one day I'll have some sirloin strips, and then I'll mix that in with some fajitas, and the next day I'll have one or two single-pound ribeyes, and then the next day I'll have like a cowboy ribeye steak and stuff like that. So that's basically where all my my protein money is in the meat department. So otherwise I'll do eggs or whatever can give me that protein quick so I can hit the gym and get my pump in.
Unlike some of your opponents that are all sizzle and no steak.
Absolutely, you got that right.
I just had to throw that in. But anyway, we're waiting for our first guest to call, and we're waiting for Scott to call in. You know, he, like I say, he's busy doing the whole script writing thing, and you know, we all have our life things that we got to attend to. You do, I do, Big Swing does, and the director does. But you know, usually on Monday nights, we all try and come together. And we all try to entertain you, the fans that are listening. And one other quick announcement I have, I'm working on Ken's FM here, and of course this is just in the developmental stages right now, but working on a little show where we play we do comic books. On the show, we play old comic books and stuff like that, like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, you name it. That's a thing that's in development right now. Yeah, I don't think I've ever. I'm sure we talked about this before, Matthias, but are you a comic book guy?
I mean, not as much as the next guy, but I mean, I can dwindle into a comic book or two if I ever want something interesting to take a look at.
Because I know you're a Pokemon guy.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Pokemon, I'm more into, like, the cards because I've been collecting those since I've been a young kid. I've collected some first editions from 1999. Now I've got binders full of cards, whether it be Yu-Gi-Oh cards, Pokemon cards, that kind of thing. It's been one of my big passions, and it's going to be one of my biggest profits. So it's going to be an interesting thing for sure.
Well, you know, I don't think we've ever discussed this. We got a few minutes. We'll kind of get into it because I kind of like talking about collector's cards and everything. How old are you, Matthias?
I am 30.
You're 30, so I'm 16 years older than you are. So Pokemon came out when you were how old?
Pokemon came out when I was 5.
When you were 5. So that means it came out when I was, 20?
Pokemon, I'm not sure, let me look at the actual debut, but the cards, the first edition cards were 99, so I was 5 at the time when the first ever set of cards came out. Let me see if I can find.
So if you're 30 and I'm 46, I'm 16 years older than you are, so if they would have came out at 99 when you're 5, that means I would have been... See, 16 plus 5, I would have been 21 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing about being 21 years old, it was hard for me to get into Pokemon at that time. And, you know, the sad thing is, though, Matthias, I kicked myself that I didn't get into it.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things. Like, a lot of people that I know don't like the same things I do. And especially when it comes to collecting cards and stuff like that. Because people will say, oh, that's a bunch of garbage, I was boring, I didn't want to play with those. And it wasn't even like, and for me, I never even played the game. I never actually sat down, built my own deck, and faced my friends. It was, we went and got cards, and it wasn't even like, we were kids. We didn't know what we got. We didn't know what monster was the best. We just followed one we liked, and mine just so happened to be Charizard, the Fire Dragon. The second evolution after was with Charmander, who he went to Charmeleon and Charizard, as some Pokemon fans will know. Of course, you better know that. But Charizard was my favorite Pokemon character growing up, and I just kept chasing his cards. And every time a friend of mine would pull a Charizard, as they say, they'd pull, as soon as he would pull a Charizard, I would offer him a card, and it would be either accepted or not. It was just a bunch of trading. It was like, you know, it was like crack cocaine to kids. And it was like, oh, you want this card? I'll trade you these two for this one. Or, oh, you got a Pikachu, a holographic Pikachu. I'll trade you my Pinsir and my Weedle for your holographic Pikachu. Or, you know, whatever the case may be. It was like, I said, crack cocaine to kids. And then if the kids kept their cards and actually kept them in decent condition and kept them in a binder like I did, then all of a sudden you get older and then the nostalgic stuff is coming back. Like, let's say I got Pokemon Ruby for the Game Boy Advance a long time ago, and I think that was like in late 90s, almost early 2000. I have to look at the exact date that Pokemon Ruby came out. But
we are going to we'll continue this. I want to continue this, but our first guest, I do believe, is ready and waiting. So we are going to take a quick little commercial break. We'll be back after these messages with our first guest. So please stay with us.
The DJ Colder Agency of American Family Insurance is another fine sponsor of 89.1 Ken's FM. They're located at 4215 31st Avenue South, Suite B in Fargo. If you need car insurance,
DJ Colter.
If you need life insurance,
DJ Colter.
If you need that new teen driver insurance,
DJ Colter.
If you need all your insurance under one umbrella,
DJ Colter.
Need a friend in the insurance business,
DJ Colter of American Family Insurance Agency, 701-235-6641.
Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle, she is our first guest of the night, and her bishop, no, our pawn is going to take her bishop, because she is Kelly Bishop.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Kelly, how are you? Good to have you with us. We finally got it done after 9 months. We finally got this thing done.
Yep, so here I am.
All right, so here's how we're going to do this, Kelly. I'm going to ask you a few questions, and we'll do a roundtable, and we'll come back to me, and we'll ask you the tougher questions. But first off, we want you to give us a little background about yourself. Go ahead.
Oh, a little background about me. Well, I'm an actress and a current producer. I started out in Chicago and worked my way over here to Florida in the film network here. So working on some great projects this year, a horror film that's supposed to be coming, hopefully by fall we'll have it done. Going to have some great names in that film. It's supposed to be pretty exciting, theatrical release. So just been working on a lot of stuff.
And you've been in a lot of iconic roles, so to speak, pun intended. Can you tell us about a few of those?
Well, my first role that I did, I had a movie that I was just in called The Secrets That Kill, and I play a killer in that movie, so that was pretty exciting, different. And then I was just in another short film that was filmed in Georgia. It was kind of a perspective type of film done by some college students. It's going to be coming out hopefully by this next month, June, they're saying. Also working on another film, like I said, a horror film called Parish, and that's going to be starring me, Crystal Snow, Michael Paré. Got some, like I said, some great names in there. I'm also on a TV series called Angel Dust, season 2. Currently, Angel Dust is on Amazon Prime. Season 1 is already out. I will be joining the cast as the witch Celine on season 2. Filming this summer. I'm also a producer on that series.
And with Angel Dust, you said you're starting your second season. Is that correct?
Yep, we're going into the second season.
Now, did with that being said, I'm guessing that the strike kind of delayed stuff, did it not?
Oh, big time. this was already supposed to be shot already, technically, but yes, the strike did put some things on hold. We have some SAG actors on that series. Like Daniel Baldwin is on our show, so definitely put things on hold a little bit, but we're not going to let it get us down. That's over now. We're moving forward. So just looking forward to when we're actually on set and getting some things filmed and done.
And now, so you'll be, with that being said, I guess you'll be filming through the summer then, right, or not?
I'll be filming quite a bit this summer, yeah. Actually, next month, too, I'm in a film called Ride to Die. It's a biker movie. It's going to be really great. So we're filming in Tampa the first week and second week of June.
That's awesome. Kelly Bishop's our guest here on 89.1 10 Tip. So here's what we're going to do. Before we come back to me and ask you the tougher stuff, I'm going to introduce you to my first co-host. He is the director, Scott Hand. And then we got to make sure, Kelly, that we do that little script before we're done. But, Scott, what do you have for our guest? Go ahead.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey.
I see you do a lot of mainstream stuff, and you said that you're a producer. Now, are you part of PGA or no?
I'm not. I'm just, like, now getting my feet wet. I'm completely independent. I started in the business as a model at the age of 12 years old. I was in the contest The Look of the Year with Cindy Crawford, many other big names. I was a pretty big model from 1992 all the way till, like, about 1998. I worked in the modeling industry and just wanted to be more into acting and stuff like that. I'm just learning now, getting my feet wet with the producing stuff. It's like a work in progress, learning from some other people, but I'm very excited about it. I do love it. I love being on set. We're just trying to do some different stuff. I mean, we're really trying to bring some really good entertainment to people without all the crap that they usually throw in there, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I do. Absolutely. Yeah. Now you're a SAG member as well?
I'm not yet. I actually don't even know if I'm going to go that route, to be honest with you. Like I said, I'm independent.
Yeah.
It's working for me. And we also have, I've heard through the grapevine about some new things coming about in the next 6 months to a year, people starting new unions. So I'll just say that.
Yeah, I know. I've been hearing things about FICOR because I'm an independent director, you know, and I'm an independent producer and screenwriter as well. And
sure.
I've got two movies in development right now, and I've got a feature film ready to looking for distribution, and then I have a couple of short films as well that are going into film festivals. Now, when you were saying you were doing the short films, what is the game plan for the distribution that you guys have for them?
Well, as far as the short film that I was just in, that's on that. I actually have no idea. I know that they're going to some film festivals, and that's really exciting. And so is the other film that I was in, The Secrets That Kill. I plan on getting a little more involved with the film festivals if they want me to get involved. But I basically was just acting in those. I'm not a producer in either one of those films. I'm more a producer on Parrish and on Angel Dust season 2.
Yeah, I hear you about as far as staying away from the unions. I'm planning to do the same thing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I have nothing against it. Don't get me wrong. If it works for people, then more power to them, you know what I mean? But, like, I've honestly just never needed it, you know? If that changes in the future, then that's fine. But right now I'm just kind of keeping things as they're going. It's working for me. I know it's working for many other people. There's a lot of independent producers, directors out there, casting agents. I mean, it's time to open up the doors for people that have really been trying, like myself, and I know several others that are deserving, and We paid our dues already, if you will, you know.
Kelly Bishop is our guest here on 89.1 KINS FM, and we got a good chunk of time here. We got about 25 minutes here left with Kelly. Now I want to introduce you to our wrestler here, Kelly, and he is a horror film junkie as well. So you guys, I'm sure, are going to have a lot to talk about. Just don't take all the rest of the time, then, Matthias. So what do you got? Go ahead, there, Nightmare.
Every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare. North Dakota's number one heel, current reigning, defending, undisputed APW World Heavyweight Champion, NXT World Tag Team Champion, and Rudo's promotion all-weight Intercontinental Champion, and soon again to be NXT World Heavyweight Champion, APW United States.
The following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
BGW World Heavyweight Champion and honorary member of the New World Order, Mathias, welcome onto my part of the program. Yes, as Icon did say, I am a big, very big horror fanatic. I've been a fan of horror movies since I can remember. One of my first ever films that I ever got to see that really triggered my love for horror was Scream, 1996, Wes Craven. Would you say that horror films are one of your favorite genres, or is there another one out there that precedes horror movies for you?
I would say my favorite horror film, I mean, I grew up with horror. I'm just going to say that. I watched everything from, you know, The Crypt Keeper to, oh, God, I mean, Halloween movies, Freddy Krueger. So I grew up watching, you know, Scream films and always was interested in doing some acting in horror. That's more my genre as well as drama, you know, stuff like that. I would have to say my favorite horror film would be the Freddy Krueger series for sure. They scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. I couldn't barely sleep after watching that.
So you would say that probably the slasher films are one of your favorite subgenres of horror?
Yes, for sure.
Oh, okay, Icon, I'm sorry, but I'm taking over this for a little bit here. So, you
have 5 minutes.
Yeah, so Freddy Krueger is one of your favorites, and Scream, of course, was one of mine. Both Wes Craven fans, so that's excellent. Another question I would have to say is, do you think that out of all the horror series, Scream, Child's Play, Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw, Hellraiser, all that kind of stuff, are there any names, like, or any horror franchises that you think should have quit while they were ahead, or that they could just keep making films and it's not really ever going to bug you?
You know, I'm not a big fan of the remake, I'm just going to say. I mean, that's why what we're doing is completely different. What people, I think, will be surprised but still entertained with the horror that we're doing. I can't speak for everybody, but like what we're trying to do is bring some awareness to a real problem as well, but make it exciting and make it, you know, scary at the same time where you're scared, you don't know what's going on, or you don't know what's going to happen next. But I think I'm not a big fan of the Saw movies, let's just say that.
Oh, okay, well, there's one thing we differentiate there, and I can agree. I mean, I can see where a lot of people are coming from because they don't like the amount of gore and the amount of blood and guts that they have in those films. For me, I enjoy the aspect of it. I love the story from the original all the way to the final chapter. It was...
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Are you guys there?
Yeah,
no, we're here.
Did we lose her?
Oh,
she's there.
I totally lost you for a minute.
Yeah, cut out on me, too.
Okay, so as I was stating with the Saw films, like I said, I can agree, but I love the story. It is a little gory. So if you're a gore hound, you'll love them. If not, you won't. But the story, I believe, is one of the greatest horror franchises. And with Saw X being brought in recently to go between Saws 2 and 3, now all of a sudden they're going to make another one to go later into that other story. So I like how they're bringing things back. But as you stated in the remake statement, there are two... Well, there's actually three. Three that I do not really care for, but there's one that I touch, you know, regardless. So the one I'd watch regardless, but I'm not really a big fan of, is the Child's Play one from 2019 when they remade Chucky as Buddy.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing, I mean, I understand it was kind of like a soul transfer thing, but it was AI and it was a robot, so it just, it didn't bring me back to the old 80s Chucky feel.
Yeah.
One that I've seen once and I'll never ever watch again because I can't stand it is Halloween Ends. For many a reason, but the ending, I can talk about in a minute, but nope, not going to go there. And I hate to say it, but one film that I have heard of, that I've seen, or that I haven't seen, but I've heard of, that I will never, ever watch, is the Nightmare on Elm Street 2010 remake, because Robert Englund is my only Freddy Krueger. I've heard what they've done with Freddy in the new one. The makeup just looks off. It's just, no thank you. Like, I mean, I love Nightmare on Elm Street. I've seen them all, but the new one, I can't watch.
Totally agreed.
Because there are some characters that are played by one person, and that's, like, the only person that should play that. And once Robert Englund passed away, Freddy Krueger should have passed away along with it. Jason... But like with guys like Michael Myers and Jason, you can say, oh, I like the original Michael Myers, or I like this Judge Hugh Courtney as Michael Myers, or for Jason, you could say, well, Friday the 13th Part 3 version the best, or I like Kane Hodder the best. Or it's like, because they're under a mask, it's just how they portray the character, but with the iconic voice, the iconic movement, the iconic one-liners, Robert Englund can only be Freddy Krueger, and that is it.
Yes, I totally agree with that, 100%.
And then, like I said, with the Halloween Ends, I get where they were trying to go, but I watched that, and I saw so many people get up and walk out so disappointed due to the fact that, so like, as Icon said, I am a wrestler. I've been a wrestler for 11 years. The whole point and part of pro wrestling is making a story that people will believe in, that people get behind, that people want to see go to a astonishing conclusion. Whereas Nightmare Halloween, you get Halloween 2018, which was good. Then you got Halloween Kills, which everyone said was the end because evil dies tonight. And then all of a sudden, you see on Facebook that they've already got another movie coming in called Halloween Ends, so you already know that's not going to be the end. You're already, you know, kind of, you already know it's not going to be the end for Michael Myers, so then you're waiting for the next year, and then they just completely bombed it at the end with Michael versus Laurie. Michael looked weak all the way going into the final battle, and then Jamie Lee Curtis just killed him within
Kelly Bishop's our guest here, and we got we still got a lot of time left. We got about let's see if you can last that long. We got about 13 minutes here with Kelly. So now I want to ask you a few things here, and for those of you who listen to our show on a regular basis, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era Monday Live Monday, like that, go to Ken's FM page on Facebook, like that, do a $10 a month donation to Power of the Tower. We'll get you automatically qualified to win an autographed picture from past guests, current guests, and future guests. And I do believe, Kelly, you either sent us some or you're going to be sending some, I think.
Yes, I'm going to be sending you guys some great pictures with my autograph on them.
All right. And for those of you listening, start liking. And I know I shouldn't say this, but if you click on like multiple times, you'll get multiple entries. But anyway, that's something for another story. So now, Kelly, you mentioned that when did you wrap up production on season one of Angel Dust?
Oh, boy. So I wasn't in season one, but that has actually been out for a while, a little bit now. We did have some trouble with Amazon stuff, but it's still on Amazon Prime now, season one. So I want to say that wrapped in 2022.
You know, and, you know, Angel Dust, you know, is such a great series. You know, we were going to have Crystal as a guest on our show with us. And unfortunately, the last time we were supposed to have her on, you know, there's that darn strike thing. And, you know, there are certain rules that everybody had to follow, so she couldn't be on with us. And I'm still trying to get her rescheduled, you know, kind of like, you know, we had you scheduled and we had to reschedule you and we finally got it done. But, you know, the cool thing is about Angel Dust is how long have they told you is your schedule going to be on Angel Dust?
We're supposed to shoot this summer. I know that, and I think it's a couple months total for everything to get done. I mean, there's a lot more to this season, that's for sure. There's a lot more exciting stuff to this season.
So now, are you gonna film it all, then it'll be shown, or are you gonna film an episode, it'll be shown, then another episode, or how does that work on the production?
I actually don't even have the answer to that for you. I'm sorry. We don't really know yet. Crystal is the better person to ask all this to, since she's the, you know, the owner of Break the Chain Films. She's a dear friend of mine. I actually was just with her in California. We were at the Oscars Luxury Gala, and she just won a TV Producer of the Year.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing that, you know, I'm kind of hoping maybe when I'm sure you'll be seeing Crystal a lot this summer, I would guess.
Yes.
Maybe you can kind of butter up and let her know how much fun we are, and maybe we can get her on a little quicker.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I could try that.
Awesome. So now, do you plan on, or I suppose you probably don't know, if you'll be on every single episode or every other episode, or you haven't really discussed that, I don't know if you can get into specifics and whatnot, but you know what the plan is for how many episodes you might be in.
I'm pretty sure quite a few. I know it's a very good role. It's a very big role that I have. Like I said, I play a witch named Celine. She keeps, like, the balance of heaven and hell on the show. So it should be really interesting, and we plan on having several seasons of this series. It's going to get great.
And, you know, what would be really cool, and, of course, our fans would think that I'm kind of pondering for this, but you know, if they ask you, do you know of anybody that's got a big ego that would make a perfect extra for the show, you can throw my name their way. I'd love to come do that. I'll even carry your bags and get your cappuccino for you.
We're actually going to have some opportunities for people to get involved with shooting and being in the film, being in the TV series. Just have to look out for what we're going to post on Facebook and on the internet regarding that. So we are going to have some more casting going on for more roles and for extras as well.
All right, cool. Well, I'll tell you what, I know my name up until this interview has been on, it's been on your speed dial up until now, but no, I'm kidding. You know, the one cool thing about being on a TV series that's also going to be made into a movie, do you have a preference, one or the other, whether it be on the big screen or the small screen, or is it all the same for you?
I am very excited to have a film come out on the big screen for sure. It has been a lifelong goal of mine, and I really, really hope that it's going to happen. I don't count my, you know, chickens before they hatch kind of thing, but, you know, Parrish is going to be amazing. It's going to be a great film. I know everybody's going to want to go see it. It's going to touch on a lot of things that we're currently going through in this country. It's going to be very real because that's what we're about. No fake stuff, really, to get to the core of the problem and, you know, what we're going to do about it. in the movie.
Now, do you plan on? Do you know when the projected release is for the movie?
Projected release? No, I don't. I'm sorry. We're hoping just in time for like fall.
See, I know exactly around
October is when we were originally planning on releasing it. Of course, you know when all horror should be released in October.
Well, I bet you I know what happened, Kelly. You told them that you're going to be on the show tonight, and they said, well, hey, we can't, the icon's going to ask her everything and going to spoil everything, so we can't tell her anything yet. We got to wait.
Exactly. I kind of got a big mouth. I got to be careful. But it's always good, you know. It's just to promote everybody and the projects we're working on, and so I'm sure they don't mind.
Well, you know, one thing that is kind of cool, Kelly, the fact that we would love to have you back on. So whenever you are ready to release that, we'd love to have you come on and promote that.
Well, that'd be great.
And also, maybe if we could work this out, you can bring some cast members with you, and we could do like a whole show centered around the release of the movie.
Oh, my God, that'd be amazing.
And, that has worked for me in the past. As a matter of fact, it worked quite a bit last week, as Matthias could attest to. How many did we have for that movie last week? Was it 8 people?
Yes, I believe so.
All right. See, and as you can see, Kelly, it does work. Kelly Bishop, mm-hmm. I guess we got about 4 minutes left. So if our fans want to check you out and see it, you got a Facebook, an Instagram, YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok. What do you got?
Oh, yeah. So you can find me on Facebook. It's just Kelly A. Bishop. And on Instagram, it is Katie Shea, and that's spelled KayDeeShaye. And I just started my YouTube channel. I haven't put anything out yet, but I plan on it. I just started my YouTube channel called Queen of the Hive.
All right. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, if you also want to promote that, when you start doing that, we can have you back on there to promote that. And maybe you can do like a YouTube video, how to interview with the icon, something like that.
That sounds awesome.
And also, just so people know, we want to make sure that people don't confuse you, Kelly Bishop, with the Kelly Bishop that was in Dirty Dancing.
Oh, God, no. She's amazing, but yes, we share the same name, but I don't think she has her middle initial. I kept my middle initial in there.
Has anybody ever confused you on that? I'm just kind of curious. Anybody ever confused you on that?
No, not yet. You're the first person who's actually noticed.
Oh, so no one has ever asked you. So tell me, is your favorite line still, no one puts baby in a corner?
It's a great line, we got to admit.
That's awesome. Anyway, we have Kelly Bishop as a guest here. We got about 2 minutes. I'll tell you what, Kelly, I do want to thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule. It took 9 months to get it done, and I know that your 21st birthday is Friday, I do believe, and we want to make sure we wish you a happy birthday because that's one of the cool things that we like to do is wish our guests a happy birthday. It's been within a short amount of time, and like I say, we know that you're turning 21 on Saturday, so we want to make sure that everybody wishes you a happy birthday out there in Radio Land.
It's actually Friday. I can't believe my birthday actually fell on a Friday this year. I had to go through all the days of the boring week, you know, to get to Friday.
Well, you know what they say, it's better to have a birthday on a Friday night or Saturday night compared to the rest of the days of the week.
I agree.
It's better, unless you have to be on set the next day, no matter what, then that can get a little hairy. But
well, yeah,
if
I got to be on set the next day, it's no partying for me.
well, at least you can at least take time to blow out the candles, though, right?
Exactly. Oh yes, all 21 of them.
You know, and that's the other difference between you and the other Kelly Bishop. She's 80. Your cake is not a fire hazard yet, like hers is.
I'm getting close.
Oh, that was cool. Well, I'll tell you what, Kelly, you have been so awesome. We do appreciate you. Thank you for being on with us, and we will definitely have you back on with us again.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Kelly.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. That was Kelly, ladies and gentlemen, and that was an awesome, awesome interview. So it looks like our next guest is waiting, so we need to take a quick little commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages, so stick with us. Do not go anywhere. All right, do not go anywhere because we have a more show after this commercial, if I can get it to play.
New clocks are here. The new clocks are here. Yes, for a limited time, you can get your very own 89.1 Ken's FM clock. For a $25 donation, you can get a classic analog round-faced clock with the 89.1 Ken's FM logo on the front. Just go to our website, www.kensfm.com, and under the More Merch tab, you will find the clocks along with numerous other new merch you can order. Get yours now while supplies last. We have these in limited quantity. So order now at www.kensfm.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle, our next guest is with us right now. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the man who likes to till the land. He is Donald Farmer.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man, what's going on?
Oh, well, just a really exciting month right now. I've got, you know, my movie Shark Exorcist 2 comes out on DVD next week. It's already been released on Blu-ray in Japan. And we just had Japanese movie theaters ran two of my movies in theaters in the last few weeks. So have got a whole lot going on right now.
And you also celebrated your 21st birthday on the 2nd of May.
Yeah, I got the same birthday as The Rock. So, yeah, we both had our birthday.
So now we know where all the talent comes from. You have to be born on the 2nd of May.
Yeah, that's the birthday of The Rock and David Beckham and the big fashion designer of Versace. So, yeah, I guess that's a good day.
Donald Farmer's our guest here on 89.1 Ken's FM. Here's how we're going to do this. Donald, I'm going to ask you a few questions, and then we'll do a roundtable, and then we'll come back to me and ask you the tougher questions. And, of course, we've got to take our top of the hour break. But give us a little background about yourself, and then we'll have some fun with the interview. Go ahead.
Well, I've been making movies professionally since 86. That was when I did my first movie that was professionally distributed internationally. That was a movie I did called Demon Queen that I shot in Miami, and it was released in America, France, Belgium, and Korea. Before that, I'd just been making amateur movies that nobody saw except my friends. So I started making amateur movies in 73, but 86 was the year I went professional and started making movies that could actually be seen all over the world and would actually make me a little bit of money.
Yeah, some of my favorites, of course, you know, Demon Queen, Scream Dream, Vampire Cop, Invasion of Scream Queens, Red Lips, Deadly Run, Vicious Kiss, Red Lips 2, Space Kid. I'm hoping you'll cast me in Red Lips 3, Red Lips Eat the Living, Body Shop, Shark Exorcist, like you mentioned, coming up, Bigfoot Exorcist, Debbie Does Demons, and Shark Exorcist 2. Man, you got a bevy of great films, and I know that my two, well, of course, we got Matthias, who's a horror film guy, who's going to talk to you about that, and then we have the director, who's going to talk to you about directing, but I want to talk to you about some of the, you know, of course, because this is PG, there's a few movies of yours that I really, really like that we can't really talk about, but most of them probably could have been seen on USA Up All Night on Friday night or Saturday night.
Yeah, I know that some of my movies were shown on Cinemax, or they used to call it Skinemax, but you know, where they had the late night sexy movie. So I think the movie I did with Brigitte Nielsen, Compelling Evidence. Somebody told me they saw it on Cinemax. I don't really subscribe to Cinemax, so I have to just have friends tell me if one of my movies shows. The whole thing about making movies for an international market is that your distributors a lot of times will not tell you what countries your movies are being released in, so you basically have to look around on Google on the internet and try to find out for yourself, because they very rarely will they even tell you. I mean, I had to find out on Google that my Shark Exorcist movie was, I didn't know it was going to be released in Poland, so I found out. And then for some reason, even though I'm not a member of the Writers Guild of America, they sent me a few residual checks a few years ago, and when they did, they sent me a breakdown of what countries some of my movies were in, so that was interesting to read all these foreign countries that licensed my new movies. I was finding out about it for the first time. Like, I didn't know my movies were being shown in Spain, and they were being shown in Brazil and different countries.
You know, I'm going to ask you a little bit about that, then we'll go to Scott. But before we do that, let's we got to do a little legal thing here. We'll be right back.
You're listening to 89.1 KENZ FM, KNNZ FM, Holly, Fargo-Moorhead. Independent public radio for Fargo-Moorhead and the Valley. Also on the web at www.kenzfm.com.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We'll do the roundtable. I'm going to come back and ask you some more questions about the whole Cinemax thing and movies in Poland and stuff. Yeah, I have a couple interesting questions about that. I don't know if you'll be able to answer them, but we'll see. But my first co-host, the director, Scott Hahn himself, you guys obviously have a lot in common because you guys both direct horror films. But, Scotty, what do you got? Go ahead.
Hi, Donald. How are you?
Well, pretty good.
Yeah, you have a really interesting resume. I'm a horror fan myself, and I went into writing and directing horror movies. Yeah, I know you've been doing it for a long time. Have you seen a change in the industry though, like through the decades, or no?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When I first started doing it professionally in '86, the home video market was not that old. It had only been around since, you know, people started buying video recording machines around 79 and 80. Those were the two big years that they were introduced into consumer America, where people were buying videotape machines, where you were then now able to buy these movies on videotape and watch them in your home. And so this was a very young market when I got involved in it. And at the time, it was a market that favored the producer because there was a huge demand for product and not enough producers filling that demand. So if you were like me and had the idea to make some horror movies as cheaply as you possibly could, shooting on video instead of on 35 millimeter or 16 millimeter, back then, you had no trouble at all finding distributors for them. In fact, I would sometimes have multiple offers because, all the distributors back then were looking to buy these cheap shot-on-video movies because they needed product, but they didn't want to pay a lot for their product. And for them to buy a movie that had a major theatrical release was, in a lot of cases, it was prohibitively expensive to buy a 35-millimeter movie that had been playing in theaters. You know, something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre that had been, well, shot on 16 but blown up to 35 and played theaters, that would have cost or a movie like Halloween, you know, those would have cost a fortune for any video distributor to license them. But they could go to a guy like me who was making very low-budget movies shot on video and very affordably license them and buy a whole ton of movies like this, and all of a sudden their company had a large product inventory of fit titles that did not cost them that much per title. So it was definitely a producer's market back then, and now it's just the opposite. Now there's too many producers making low-budget horror movies, and there's more movies being made than there is a market demand for them. So now distributors are being more selective, and a lot of films are being made, and they are going undistributed, or if they're getting any distribution at all, a lot of these movies are playing in film festivals, but they don't have any kind of physical media release. So that's just because of how the market has shifted and how it's getting harder to make an independent movie and get distribution for it. Because nowadays, you know, if you look on Facebook or any of the websites, just zillions of producers all over the world are making low-budget horror movies, and there's just not that many distributors that can handle that much product.
Mm-hmm. And the streaming as well, right? The streaming has also changed things.
Yeah, well, the streaming has, of course, made it where it's done no favors for physical media. Blu-rays are still the predominant market. Of course, there's also 4K, which is sort of an offshoot of the Blu-ray market, and DVD is still around. But, you know, in one of those types of physical media, a lot of movies don't do that. They just go straight for streaming. If even that, there's some movies that don't even do streaming. They just play the festival circuit. A lot of people just make movies because they like to have their movies on film festivals, and they don't care if they ever have any release beyond that. They just like to be part of film festivals. And then a lot of people make movies that are totally uncommercial. I have a lot of friends that have made independent movies that are not horror related. They're not in a commercial genre. Like I had a friend that made a romantic comedy, and another guy that made a wacky comedy that didn't really have any commercial hook to it. And so they make these movies, and then they can't do anything with them because, if they're not in a commercial genre, a lot of distributors just aren't interested. And there's a lot of distributors I deal with that will only consider your movie if it's either horror or sci-fi. If it's not one of those two things, you know, they're just flat out not interested.
Now, is that Wild Irish?
If you're making a romantic movie, you know, good luck, because if you don't have as many celebrities in it, you know, you'll have a very difficult time finding a distributor for it.
Now, is Wild Eye releasing one of your distributors?
Yeah, that's one of the three distributors I'm currently dealing with, and they're my primary distributor. They put out my original Shark Exorcist plus my documentary Invasion of the Scream Queens, and also my anthology movie I contributed to called High Eight. And then they're putting out Shark Exorcist 2. They've got that released in both America and Japan. And they're putting that out next week. Shark Exorcist 2 comes out May 21st next week on DVD. And it's already been released on Blu-ray in Japan. And then next month in June, Wild Eye is putting out my movie Bigfoot Exorcist. So they're putting both of these out just within a few weeks of each other. And then I've already delivered my latest movie, Amityville Aliens, to Wild Eye, so they'll be putting that out probably early next year. And then next week I'm going to be delivering another one of my new movies to them, Darby Screenhouse. We just finished post-production on it, so that's two new movies I'm putting in the Wild Eye pipeline, and they'll be putting both of those out sometime next year.
Donald Farmer's our guest here. We got about 19 minutes left. We're going to go. Do you have another question there, Scott?
No, go ahead.
All right. We're going to go to Matthias. Now, Matthias, he was on hold during the first guest, so he's already heard your spiel, so he does want to hear it again. But let's just cut right to the chase. You could talk to him about a couple of your favorite movies of his, like Space Kid. What do you got, Matthias? Go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm always going to do part of my spiel. So, yes, you are talking to the man from Every Woman. Greatest APW World Heavyweight Champion and honorary member of the New World Order, Matthias, welcome on to my part of the program. Yes, as you probably heard throughout the first guest, I am a massive horror fan, and we kind of got talking into Wes Craven and his films, and we kind of went into the genre about exceeding the amount of films that really needed to be put out for that specific series. So I'll ask that same question to you. Is there any horror franchise that you've seen grow that should have possibly just, you know, died out before it continued?
Okay. His voice was cutting in and out, so I couldn't hear his complete question. Was he asking if there was a horror franchise I like?
Yeah. So my question was, is there a horror franchise out there that you're aware of that you think should have died out while it was ahead and quit making films? Like, for me, it was like Halloween with Halloween Ends and stuff like that. Is there any like that for you?
Yeah, I lost interest in the Halloween franchise probably after H2O. I haven't really seen any of the ones after H2O. And I'm also not interested in the Scream franchise, and I'm not interested in the Conjuring franchise. A lot of these, and I don't care anything about the Annabelle franchise. Those are
There's several franchises that I have not any interest in. Now, there is a new movie that's promising to be a franchise that I am interested in. It's the Megan movie. I like that one quite a lot, and I understand there's going to be a sequel to Megan. So that's a franchise I'm looking forward to seeing part two. And my favorite franchise currently is the X franchise from that stars Mia Goth. There's been two movies so far, and the new one, Maxine, is coming out this summer. That's going to be the third film in the X franchise. And so that's currently my favorite franchise is the X franchise with Mia Goth. There's even rumors there may be a fourth film, and if there is, I'm all for it. So, yeah, the Mia franchise, the X franchise and the Megan franchise are my two current favorite franchises.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you there on the X franchise with X, Pearl, and then going on to Maxine. I've been waiting for Maxine for the longest time to finally show up because Ty West has been killing it with these films recently, and I applaud him. And stuff like that. It's been great. My next question to you will be, and this could be any film, any moment at all, is there a film or a moment in a film that you can recall that every time you watch it, no matter how old you are, no matter how many times you've seen it, that will still kind of get you to either, you know, jump or squirm or cringe or anything like that?
Well, the first movie that really scared me when I was little was probably The Tingler with Vincent Price. I remember the first time I tried to watch it was scaring me so much I had to turn off the TV, and it wasn't until the next year, I think I must have been 8 or something, so it was probably the next year when they showed it on TV again that I had a year's worth of courage built up and I could watch it all the way through. But that movie doesn't really scare me anymore. Now when I watch it, it doesn't really bother me anymore. But I remember when I first watched it when I was 8, I can't remember ever a movie scaring me as much as The Tingler. But
yeah,
there's really not – I can't really think of too many movies that would, once you've seen it for the first time, that would continue to upset you. I mean, the first time I saw Carrie in a movie theater packed with people at the very end when the hand comes out of the grave and everybody in the theater jumps out of their seats, that worked incredibly well the first time. And then every time you see the movie after that, it works less and less because you know it's coming. So it's hard for a movie to keep on shocking you once you've seen it and keep giving you a genuine shock. That's definitely difficult. Like another big shock the first time you see it is in Jaws when they're scuba diving underneath a boat and they look at the hole in the bottom of the boat and the dead corpse's head pops up. That makes everybody jump really good the first time you see it. But then after that, you kind of know it's coming.
Absolutely. I will agree there. But there is one segment for me that, because I have had this issue before, that always kind of gets me just to, like, you know, cringe just a little bit. But are you familiar with the Hatchet movie series?
I've seen the first one. I didn't see any of the sequels. I only saw the first one. Only reason I watched the first one was because I understood it filmed some scenes at the voodoo shop in New Orleans, and I've been to the voodoo shop. There's two of them in New Orleans, and I've been to both of them. So I'm always curious to see a movie that's filmed in a place that I've been in so I can see if the way it looks in the movie jives with my memory of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, in the very first Hatchet movie, the second kill of that movie when they finally meet Victor Crowley and he kills the old man with his hatchet, then he rips the woman's jaw in half. Like, I've had lockjaw where, you know, your jaw locks up and you can't move and it's really painful. Well, when Victor goes and puts his hands in the woman's mouth and extends it to where it can, you know, it stops, and then he continues, and you see, like, the cheeks rip. Like, I've had that feeling where it feels like your cheeks are ripping. I felt that in The Ring. I felt that with Lockjaw. So it's just like, you know, it's like it always gets me just a little bit. But I concur that once you've seen the movie, you know it's coming if you've memorized it well enough. And usually when I'm going to horror movies, a lot of people will jump, and I'm just sitting there, it's like, yeah, you know, if you were really paying attention, you could have expected that, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, most movie, the movie that's most likely to give a reaction nowadays, you have to question whether it's giving you a genuine shock reaction or whether the reaction you're getting is just based on nausea. Some movies can make you feel nauseated, like some of these Japanese snuff movies, but that's not really the same as a genuine shock, you know, because a nauseated reaction can be achieved by any number of movies that go beyond what I'm comfortable watching. But I don't really, again, that's not, nausea and shock are two separate things.
Absolutely. And so then, and we'll go into kind of like that nauseous feeling. When you said the Japanese snuff films, what do you, how do you feel about the Saw franchise, the movie Saw?
Well, that's a, you know, very well thought out franchise. I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen, I think, at least three of them. I saw the first one, one of the middle ones, and then I saw the one with Chris Rock. So I think I've missed quite a few of them because that's, again, a franchise I wasn't really hyper hot on seeing all of them after I saw the first one, because of the three I've seen, the first one I thought was the best. But it is a very good concept, and I like the idea of the little puppet on the tricycle prodding them. So it's got, you know, a lot of the key elements that make it work very well. And, you know, it's just a very well-conceived concept that takes somebody's worst nightmare and takes it to an extreme. So I do admire it, although it's not a movie I like enough to watch again. I don't really have any desire to see any of the Saw movies again. Those are movies where when you watch them once, that's usually enough for me. The kind of movies that I like the best that I will watch just unlimited number of times are like the Hammer films or the Roger Corman Poe films with Vincent Price, or pretty much any Vincent Price horror movie like Dr. Fives or Theater of Death, Theater of Blood, and all the Hammer, Frankenstein, and Dracula films. Those are the ones I really like that I'll watch just dozens of times. That I never get tired of watching those.
Oh, absolutely. With the Saw films, they've actually went into like this new genre. I don't know if I can say this word on the radio, so I won't. They call it torture. It's the second word. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with it. But yeah, with that whole going into it, a lot of people won't go see it because of the guts and the blood and the violence and stuff like that and the amount of.
Yeah, I've heard the name of that genre you're talking about, and for a movie that would fall under that category, my favorite were the two Hostel films. I did really like the two Hostel films quite a lot, and I think they're the best in that genre, which is, I guess, what you're calling torture, P-O-R-N.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Like, that, those were two great ones. And a lot of people go, like, I'll never see the Saw film because it's too gross, too much blood, too much guts and stuff, but for me, the whole story that they've got built going into each film, it's like, I think the Saw film...
You got about 2 minutes.
If you watch them all the way through, it lasts probably... it's got to be going about almost a full day of watching all the Saw films together that managed to make that story. And it's just like how they take each individual segment, they build it up and make it bigger, and then they continue on through 7 films, and now with this new Saw X film where they made John the main character for me, which was a great idea, putting it between Saws, I believe, 2 and 3, either that or 1 and 2, I forget, I believe it's 2 and 3, and now they're going to make another one to go between Saws 3 and 4, and et cetera, et cetera. It's just like bringing everything back together. I think it's just a brilliant idea with the whole Saw franchise story.
Yeah, well, the Hostel films, I think, work so well for me because I think they have the best characters, the most characters that you have the most rooting interest in, and both of them had equally strong characters, you know, especially Bijou Phillips in the second one and the whole guy that befriends the Asian girl in the first one, you know, a really, really strong protagonist that you're really rooting for nothing bad to happen for them. And both of those films have very strong, what you call, character arcs, where when they were writing the scripts for those movies, the writers were careful to give those movies lead characters each had a very interesting character arc that you could follow.
And that's usually what you really have to really get an audience involved in a movie. You have to have one character that has a character arc that goes all through the movie where you're really willing to follow that one character and really be on that character's side. And these Saw movies have never really had a character that I felt about as strongly as the characters I felt were in the Hostel movies. And also, Hostel movies are something I can relate to more personally because they the Hostel movies are based on your fear of what could happen if you go away from the tourist-friendly places in Europe and you venture into the darker areas of Eastern Europe and some of the countries that tourists aren't supposed to go. And since I've personally done that, I've been in Eastern Europe. I've been to Hungary, and I've been to Russia a few times where, you know, you see a lot of sinister guys in black leather jackets prowling around, you know, that look threatening to any American tourist. You know, I could understand where that, you know, that fear of what could happen to you when you're overseas in these so-called forbidden countries. Hostel plays on that fear. So I think Hostel works particularly well for somebody like me who's actually been overseas and been to the kinds of places that Hostel takes you to.
That makes perfect sense.
Donald Palmer's our guest here. We've got about 5 minutes here left with Donald. Real quick here, Donald, if our fans want to check you out and see you, do you have a Facebook, an Instagram, YouTube, a Twitter, Twitch, a TikTok? What do you got?
Yeah, I pretty much got everything. I've got Facebook, I've got Instagram, I've got Twitter. I'm even on Thread, which nobody is on. But, yeah, I think on Twitter my handle is Donald right here. And then on Facebook, I have two profiles, one that's inactive and one that's active. So the active one is the one where my profile picture is a painting of me with a red background. It's a painting of me done by Rick Melton, who's the portrait artist who does all the covers for Dark Side magazine. So he did my official portrait a few years ago, and so that's what I use as my profile shot on my official Facebook page. So if you go to Google and type in Donald Farmer Facebook, it'll give you two options, and that's the option you should choose, the one where my profile picture has the is a painting with a red background.
You know, Donald, I was going to ask you, you know, on your on your IMDb page, you know, where they have the videos where they show the stuff that you've done. Were you involved with David Naughton and Midnight Madness?
You mean David Naughton from American Werewolf in London?
Yes.
I was involved with one of his movies, but not that one. I was involved in a movie that he stars in that I don't believe ever got any kind of release beyond a limited theatrical screening, and my involvement with it was just very behind the scenes, where basically what they did was this company told me they were making this movie and they needed one celebrity in it and that they wanted Alice Cooper, but they didn't know how to approach Alice Cooper, so they told me they would pay me if I would contact Alice Cooper's manager and offer him $10,000, and they said, "We will pay you $600 to do this for us, regardless of whether they say yes or no. All you have to do is track down Alice Cooper's manager and make this $10,000 offer." So I did that. I looked on the internet and I found the name of Alice Cooper's manager like in 5 minutes on Google. And I called him up and I offered him $10,000. They told me $10,000 was not enough for Alice Cooper. He wanted more. So I told the producer of this movie, "Hey, I called like you said. I offered him $10,000. They said, "No way, they want more money." And so they said, "Well, tell them we're not paying any more. $10,000 is all we got." So, but they did pay me $600 for doing it. And then it turned out after they couldn't afford Alice Cooper, they turned right around and hired David Naughton. So that was my involvement in a David Naughton movie.
And you know, the other thing I was going to ask is, like, I've been watching a lot of the stuff here, and it must not be accurate because there was also a scene they were showing. I thought it was one of your movies where I thought I saw Sergeant Slaughter pop up.
Yeah, that's not one of mine. There's a trailer they show on my IMDb page that I wish they wouldn't show. It's for a James Balsamo movie, which I believe I have a cameo appearance in. I have cameo appearances in 3 James Balsamo movies, and his movies are always packed with oddball celebrities. And so, but instead of showing one of my own trailers on my IMDb page, they show this trailer for movie that I am in, but it's not a movie I had anything to do with making. So I wish they would switch that out, but I haven't been able to get them to do that. Because, you know, IMDb is not IMDb isn't run by people. It's an automated system run by robots, and it's very hard to get these IMDb automated robots to do anything you want them to do.
Well, you know, I will say this, not that I'm bragging, but I was actually impressed when I saw that I have an IMDb page with two movies I'm going to be involved in.
Uh-huh. And how do they credit you? Do they give you a thank you credit or a producer credit?
Well, they as an acting credit.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Are these coming out soon?
The Black Tent is being directed by Scott Hand, who you talked to. We're going to be working on getting a distribution for that and producing that. And then, of course, Friday the 13th, Blood Loss, I'm going to have a cameo in that. And basically I'm going to be a radio DJ talking about the events that happened in the movie. So it'll be kind of a little fun deal. But we have a little bit of time here left with you. Can you stick with us until our next guest calls in?
And that's Debbie Dutch?
Right, correct.
Oh, and she's actually one of the stars of a new movie that I co-produce. She's the star of the new Scream Dream reboot that I'm one of the producers of, which is a remake of my 1989 movie Scream Dream.
Let me ask you this. Would you want to stick around and say hello?
Oh, sure, yes. So even though I've never actually talked to her, I've written to her before on Facebook, but spoken to her, but still I am going to have a producer credit on this new movie first.
All right, well, that's cool. So I hate to say it, so I've talked to Debbie more than you have.
Yeah, I know she's, you know, well-known for working with Jim Wynorski, who's a really good friend of mine, and so she's one of his more famous actresses.
That's awesome. Now, one thing I was going to ask you, we got a little bit of time, then when Debbie jumps on, we'll go to that, and we'll have you say hello, and then you can stick around, because you've been around the whole show anyway, so it's kind of fun. But, you know, you were talking a little bit earlier about you didn't know that your movie is going to be shown in Poland and this place and that place. Do you get upset about that, or is that something you're like, well, hell, heck, that's cool. I didn't know I was going to be there.
No, I like it. I like the fact that my movies are in strange countries. I just had a guy from India write me last week telling me that he has several of my movies where he lives in India, and so that's really nice to know that my movies are being watched by somebody in India. I'm always getting people from different countries writing me on Facebook telling me they've seen my movies in their country. I think the movie of mine that had the best distribution was probably Compelling Evidence, because that's a movie where we had a good international cast. We had Brigitte Nielsen, who was in Beverly Hills Cop 2 and Rocky 4, and we had Lynn Lowry from Cat People, and she was in I Drink Your Blood, and David Cronenberg Shivers, and Robert George Romero's The Crazies, and we had Melissa Moore, who is the star of My Scream Dream, and then she went on to work for a lot of Jim Wynorski and Roger Corman movies, and so we had, you know, with that group of people especially, and then of course we had Dana Plato from Exorcist 2 and The Heretic, and but mainly thanks to Brigitte Nielsen's name value, we were able to license that movie to 30 countries, and so that movie was pretty much distributed all over Europe, a lot of Asian countries, a lot of South American countries. I know I had a friend in Budapest at the time, and she told me once, she wrote to me and said, "Oh, do you know your movie is being shown on Hungarian TV this weekend?" So I told her to videotape it for me and send me the video, because I assumed that they were going to dub it with have everybody dubbed into Hungarian. And so she sent me the tape, and sure enough, everybody in the movie, including myself, because I'm an actor in it, we're all speaking Hungarian.
Was that weird to watch?
Oh, I love it. I love to watch my movies dubbed into other languages. I know three of my movies have been released in Germany, where they've been really dubbed into German, and that's always fun to watch where, you know, all your actors are speaking German.
Well, you know, one thing I was going to ask you, go ahead.
A lot of the countries that I've, whenever one of my movies is licensed to an Asian country, they typically don't dub, they typically subtitle. Asian countries prefer subtitling, but I know the very first two movies I made when I started doing this professionally, Demon Queen and Cannibal Hookers, those were both immediately licensed to France and Korea. And France dubbed them into French, but Korea subtitled them. So right off the bat, my first two movies, I got to watch them dubbed into French because I went to, while I was in Paris, I went to a French video store where I saw both of my movies side by side on the shelf. And so, of course, I bought both of them, and when I watched them, it was lots of fun to watch all the actors speaking French.
Well, let me ask you this. How you would, not that I'm bragging here, but, you know, we're heard all over the place. I mean, we're actually the number one listened to radio show in Dhaka, Bangladesh, in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, which is kind of cool. But let me ask you this. Let's say Dhaka, Bangladesh. Let's say someone writes you and says, hey, I saw your movie out here, and you're the number one seen movie here in our country right now. How would you react to that? And then would that be like, cool, I got to get over there and see that? Or would it just be like, well, it's just another day at the office?
Well, Todd, you mentioned Bangladesh because my friend in India that collects my movies, I looked at his town up on a map, and he lives really close to the Bangladesh border. So he's just not very many miles from being in Bangladesh because Bangladesh shares the eastern border of India. But the country where I seem to have the biggest fan following is Japan, because in Japan they've just gone crazy for my first Shark Exorcist and my new one. They play both of them in theaters, and they totally go above and beyond when they release these movies on DVD and Blu-ray over there. Because in America, when the first one was released on DVD, it was released two times, once by itself and once in a three-pack with two other shark movies. But in Japan, when they released them, they give customers the option of buying the movie by itself, or you can buy it in a two-pack box set where it's packaged with another movie. But then best of all, you can buy it in this box set. And when you buy the box set, you get the movie, you get a T-shirt, you get a keychain, you get a paperback book that has my script written in both English and Japanese. Plus, you get a color magazine. And then now for Shark Exorcist 2, they've continued with this merchandising tie-in. They've made a brand-new Shark Exorcist 2 T-shirt in Japan. And best of all, they've made a little Shark Exorcist puppet doll that you can buy. I've got a photo of it on my Facebook page. Somebody took in a Japanese toy store for me. And, this is great. I'm going to try to get my hands on one of these Shark Exorcist puppet dolls because I've never had one of my movies that it had a commercially distributed toy that connected with it, so that's really great. I've had limited-run action figures before, but never a toy that was actually sold in regular toy stores.
And for those of you who listen to our show on a regular basis, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Monday Live, Monday like that. Go to 89.1 Kens FM page like that. Do a $10 a month donation to Power of the Tower. We'll get you automatically qualified to win an autographed picture from a past guest, current guest, or future guest. Now, I do believe that you either send us some or you're going to send us some, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I should also mention that I've got now two YouTube channels that people can subscribe to. I've got one where I review Blu-rays called Bloody Pit of Blu-rays on YouTube, and then my other YouTube channel is called Splatter Times TV, and that's where I show rare clips from my movies and behind-the-scenes looks at my various movies. So they can go to Splatter Times TV on YouTube and see that, or they can see Bloody Pit of Blu-rays where I do Blu-ray reviews.
Let me ask you this. What was the oddest situation where you ever saw one of your movies, whether like you were flipping through the station, flipping through the channels, you saw your movie come up, or you saw it in the guide, or like you said, you got a call from somebody in Timbuktu. What was the oddest situation that you got?
Well, I mean, one of my happiest situations was when I first started making movies, my first movie had really crappy distribution, Demon Queen. I was very unhappy with the distribution of that because I drove all over Nashville and went to about 10 different video stores, and I could only find my movie in one video store out of the 10. So when I put my second movie, Cannibal Hookers, into distribution, I was trying to get a distributor that would do a better job, and the distributor for that one did a much better job. It was just the opposite. It's more like I could go to 10 video stores and I would usually see my movie in at least 8 or 9 out of 10. And so on my very first trip, but I was always concerned that, well, I wonder if my movies were only being distributed in the South, and I wanted to make sure they were getting nice national distribution. And so when I went to New York City one time, I started hitting up all the video stores in New York to see if they carried my movies. And sure enough, I went to a Blowout Video in Times Square right underneath the studio where they made Total Request Live for MTV, and they had my movie Vampire Cop. And then I went into the Village to Kim's Video, the most famous video store in New York City, and they had Cannibal Hookers. And then I had somebody inform me that another video store closer down to the Tribeca area also carried Cannibal Hookers. And best of all, I had a friend that was manager of a video store in Canada near Toronto, and he told me that not only did they have Cannibal Hookers in his video store, but that one day Dan Aykroyd came into his store and rented Cannibal Hookers. So that was fun to hear.
So Dr. Detroit actually rented one of your movies. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so I heard that directly from the manager of the video store, who was the eyewitness. So that was kind of thrilling news to know that a celebrity is actually renting one of my movies. I don't know if he liked it, but I do know that he rented it.
Well, you know, and not that anybody cares, but, you know, I used to assist and manage a video store down in the Twin Cities, which would be Minneapolis-St. Paul area in Minnesota. And we actually had a couple of celebrities that were our customers. Jason Hartnett was one of our customers, and that was really cool. And this gentleman come in. I'll tell you the story real quick because we're waiting for Deborah. But a guy comes in, and I scanned his card, and his name was James Garlic. And I kind of threw out a little joke. I said, the first thing you need to do, Garlic, is requisition a new last name. And he said, oh, you like the movie Good Morning Vietnam? I said, yeah, I love it. It's one of my favorites, one of my mom's favorites. He said, well, the director, a friend of mine, used my name in that movie. I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, can you prove that? I said, what do you want? I said, give me an autograph of the director. I would appreciate that. So 2 days later, he comes back. He's got a package with an autographed picture from the movie, an autographed DVD of the movie, Good Morning Vietnam, for me. And the cool thing is he even had a little note. He said, your last name is this, and you're making fun of the last name Garlic? That was absolutely hilarious, you know. And I'm like, it's just a small world, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had a run-in with some A-list directors, too, where it would be odd for them to be associated with me. Maybe one of the most interesting was that everybody knows the movie Grease, and Grease was directed by a guy named Randall Kleiser. And I was on the set of a movie he was directing in Florida in the 80s called Flight of the Navigator for Walt Disney. And so I was spending 2 days on the set of this movie just as because I was also a journalist and I was covering movies for a couple of different magazines. So while I was on the set of that movie, usually I've been on the set of a lot of movies, and most of the times the director will not talk to you when you're on his set. I was on a John Carpenter set for a couple of days, and Carpenter wouldn't ever acknowledge me or talk to me at all. In fact, I was told by the publicist not to approach him and not to try to talk to him, or I would be thrown off the set. So all the other movies, I was told he will not talk to journalists because he got a bad review when The Thing came out by a magazine, and it made him hate all journalists. And so because he got such bad reviews for The Thing, he will not talk to journalists. So I was told while I was on the set of his movie Starman with Jeff Bridges, and they told me, you can bring your camera, you can take photos, as long as you don't try to talk to anybody. But if you try to talk to anyone, especially Mr. Carpenter, we will throw you off the set. But I've been on other sets, too. I was on the set of Evil Dead 2 with Sam Raimi, and he was super friendly. He even drove me around in his car. He gave me a personal tour of the filming locations. And then when I was on the set of Day of the Dead with George Romero, where he even was so nice, he even let me play a zombie in the movie, which was a huge bonus, because when I went there, I had no idea he was going to do that. That was just like a surprise he threw at me. He said, I thought you'd have more fun if you were a zombie. So
And then the friendliest director I was ever on the set with was Randall Kleiser, the director of Grease, because when I was on the set of his movie, usually these directors are too busy to even talk to you or spend much time with you, but he seemed like he had a lot of time on his hands because they were doing some special effects shots that he had to just sit around and wait, and he couldn't do anything until they were ready to film. So he had a lot of downtime, and he just was shooting the shit with me for like a good 15 or 20 minutes because he had nothing to do. And I knew that this movie was being produced by Mark Damon, who was a former horror star. And so I told him, I said, hey, Randall, are you aware that your producer of this movie, Mark Damon, starred in a bunch of horror movies like The Devil's Wedding Night and Young Hannah, Queen of the Vampires, and Fall of the House of Usher with Vincent Price? And he had no idea about this. He said, you got to be kidding me. And he said, you don't by any chance have videos of these movies, do you? And I said, sure. And he said, well, will you do me a huge favor? Will you bring me videos of these movies tomorrow night? Because I'm going to give them to Mark in front of everybody when we have the wrap party and just see his face turn red. So I brought Randall these videos, and sure enough, he said he was going to give them to him during the wrap party in front of everyone and do his best to try to embarrass him.
We have Donald Farmer as our guest here on 89.1 Kens FM, and we're on Attitude Era Monday Live Monday, waiting for our third guest call. See, one thing that where Debbie kind of clued me in on is she teaches a class at night, so her class is always on Monday. So she said she'd be running a little late. So I hope you don't mind us keeping you. I mean, we still got a little bit of time until she calls in, but unless you got to go, can you stick around?
Oh, no, I don't have to go on. No, I can stay.
All right. Well, there's a couple other films that you got coming up. I was going to ask about, like Amityville Aliens. Don't you think that the Amityville whatever is just overused, or was that the whole point?
I've only seen the original ones. I've seen the first three. My favorite was the second one, because it had the best cast. You know, I'm a huge fan of Diane Franklin and Burt Young and Andrew Prine, and so I love that it had those three, especially Andrew Prine. I'm a huge fan of Andrew Prine's, and so even though the first one was great with Rod Steiger, I still like the second one the best. And but I haven't seen any of the Amityville movies beyond those three. But when you're making these movies like I am, there's a process you have to follow to get prime distribution. And that process is you don't ever go and shoot a movie on spec where you just shoot whatever you want to shoot and then hope when you have it finished you'll find a distributor. What I do is I always have a title prepared and a summary of the movie prepared, and I can run all these by potential distributors and say, if I make this movie, would this be something you would be interested in distributing? And so I never make a movie until I've checked out with a distributor to make sure that the title that I'm proposing to make is something they would like to distribute. And so lately I've been making anthology movies where they're multi-story movies. The first one I did was Catnado, which was obviously a spoof of Sharknado, and that was coming out later this year from Wild Eye Releasing. Then after that I made Nun Dead, which was a bunch of little short zombie nun films, and that one came out last year from SRS Video. And so Amityville Aliens was going to be my latest multi-story movie, so it was going to be a bunch of short films, each one involving aliens in Amityville. And so I thought that was a good concept. So I pitched that to Wild Eye, and they said, absolutely, if you make this, we will definitely distribute it. So that's how that came about, because that's when you're pitching a movie to a distributor, you need to have a really solid concept. It can't just be a generic concept. A generic concept, for example, would be something where you just have a title like The Killer Stalks at Midnight, or, you know, Hacked to Death, or something very generic sounding. If you're going to give a movie a generic title, you've got to compensate for that by having huge stars. Like Scream is probably the most generic title you can imagine, but they could get away with it because they had enough budget to hire huge stars like Drew Barrymore and Courtney Cox. But if you don't have a budget to do that, then you basically having a generic title is distribution suicide, because it's very hard to interest a distributor with a generic title. You've got to have what I call a high concept title, a title where the title tells you exactly what the movie's going to be. So if you look over my filmography on IMDb, most of my titles, at least when I've been allowed to name the movie, is a concept title that tells you exactly what you're going to see in the movie, like Vampire Cop, Cannibal Hookers, Those are concept titles that tell you what the movie is going to have. Also, Hooker with a Hacksaw, and then Amityville Aliens. These are just my idea, my examples of concept titles. And that's what I like to go with. I like to have a concept title, not a generic title, because it's just better for pitching, better for marketing, better for getting the interest of a distributor. Because you're trying to get the interest of a distributor for a movie that will have no major stars. That's an important thing to consider. I've done movies with expensive stars before, but it's been my experience that expensive stars very rarely generate enough money for the movie to pay back what you spent hiring them. The only time I ever hired a celebrity who was really worth the money was Bridget Nielsen. She was worth, you know, what we paid her, because her entire salary was doubled with one licensing deal to Germany. They paid us twice what we paid her, so she was worth what we paid her. But most stars, when you figure out what you paid them and what did they contribute in terms of getting the movie better distribution, it's really not worth what you paid them. So nowadays I'm moving away from hiring big, expensive stars. And the most important thing now is not to have big celebrities in your movie, but to have a strong, solid, high-concept title and a strong pitch that will hook the interest of a distributor, because that's basically what it all boils down to. If you can't get the interest of a distributor, you are royally screwed.
Well, how about, would you ever consider, and I know our fans, here it comes, but I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. Would you ever consider hiring somebody to be like an extra or be on the film that doesn't require getting paid up front, would be willing to come out and do anything to help out the production, you know, like get your bags, get your coffee, stuff like that, you know, just be in the movie and, you know, would ask to be, you know, paid when it makes $1 million?
Well, I let, usually on movies, I'll usually let one person come on the set to be a PA if there's somebody I know and build locally. I'll let one of my friends in the town where we were filming Darby Screamhouse come by one day to help us, just because we needed a gopher that could run to the grocery store and get sodas for the stars. And so nobody was available to do a grocery store run, so I just let my friend who wanted to watch a little bit of the filming, I let him do it under the condition that he would do a grocery store run for us. Usually I try to keep the number of people on our sets at a bare minimum, because we're typically filming in and we're filming on location. I don't like to film in real homes of people. I don't want to film in my house, and my actors don't want to film in their houses, because nobody likes to have a camera crew in their house. So I for the last several movies, I've rented Airbnbs as our primary interior location. And when you're shooting in an Airbnb, you definitely got to keep the number of people in there to a minimum, because once you have all your actors in there and your camera people and me, then you really don't have a lot of room for anybody else. All the chairs are pretty much spoken for. So, yeah, I try to, but sometimes people will approach me out of the blue and want to have a little acting part in my movie. And if they have, you know, I want to make sure they've done this before where they're really good actors. Like there were these two actors I've never worked with before, but they wanted to do a little acting part in one of my recent movies. So I had them come out just to shoot with them where I knew I could just not use the scene if they were not any good. But they told me they were actors and they had worked in a lot of stuff before, and one of them had been in a movie I'd actually seen, so that helped that I'd actually seen one of his movies. And it turned out they were incredibly good actors, and in fact they were such good actors that one of them, I'm going to offer him a much bigger role in my next movie, just because he's a type I've always wanted to find. He's a what you call a Reggie Nalder type. He looks
right.
Like he could be Reggie Nalder's. Reggie Nalder is one of my all-time favorite character actors. He played the vampire in the TV version of Stephen King's Salem's Lot. And it's very hard to find somebody that looks like Reggie Nalder, but this guy could be Reggie Nalder's brother, so he's just perfect for this particular role I've got in my next movie. So I want to hire him just because he's such a good actor, and he's got this really creepy, he's got this super creepy, oily Reggie Nalder look.
And, you know, you actually got to work with a couple, a gal that's been on our show a couple times in the upcoming movie Darby Screamhouse. You got to Angel Nicole Bradford, who's been on our show a couple times, is in that movie.
Yeah, I've worked with her several times. She first worked with me on Debbie Does Demons, then we worked together on Blood Bitch Baby, which we finished a few months ago. And then she's also in Darby Screamhouse that I just wrapped post-production last week. And we just put that movie to bed last week. So, yeah, that's three movies in a row I've done with her, and she's really incredible to work with. I first became aware of her because she was working with this director in North Carolina who did this movie called The House That Eats Flesh, and that's how I first came to know about her, and then I started following her, and then and even though she lives sort of far away, I believe she lives near Raleigh, North Carolina, she was willing to come here, and then it helped that on the first time we worked together, I had my cinematographer lived close to her because he also lived in North Carolina, so he could get together with her to shoot special material in North Carolina, and she didn't have to, that's cut down the number of times she would have to travel to Tennessee. But yeah, she's an incredible actress, and anybody who puts her in a movie is going to be very happy with what she does because she never disappoints. She's one of those people, you know, that can, you know, deliver a real powerhouse performance.
You know, and when she was on with us, I asked her point blank, I said, can you hook us up with Donald Farmer?
Like I said, we've done three movies, and, you know, I'm really excited for people to see them. Of course, one of them's already out. Debbie Does Demons came out last year, so it's been out for exactly 1 year. But the other two should be coming out, you know, early next year.
There is one girl from that film that I've been trying to get in contact to try and be a guest on the show. I don't know if you can work some magic or pull some strings, but I've been trying to get Jessa Flux as a guest on our show for the longest time.
Oh, yeah. She's just incredibly busy and incredibly in demand. She's really blown up ever since we did Cannibal Hookers together several years ago. And so I always love it when one of my stars just really blows up and starts getting to be hugely in demand. It's sort of like when you look at how successful Jessa's like in New York City this week. She's doing her final audition for a really important movie in New York City. And so she says it looks really good that she's going to get it. So I'm hoping everything goes well. She's, you know, very much in demand. She's been flying all over the country from New York, Florida, even went into Los Angeles and did a movie out there, Murder Size. So she's doing like at least a movie every month. She's in such demand. So, yeah, it's hard to catch her with any free time because she's just so popular. And it's just like a feeling that when you look at what happened to her, it's like deja vu, like what happened to when I was using Melissa Moore in the 80s. I put her in her very first movie, Scream Dream, and then I put her in Vampire Cop, and then all of a sudden she started blowing up the way Jessa is now. And when Melissa blew up in the 80s, she really blew up. She went straight from working on my super cheap budget Scream Dream to becoming a Playboy model. Playboy magazine did a layout on her, and then she moved to L.A., and all of a sudden she's working for Jim Wynorski in 35mm movies, and then after that, Roger Corman hooked onto her, and Roger Corman started putting her in martial arts movies that he shot in the Philippines, like Hard to Die, and the only reason she's not continuing to do movies today is not because her career dried up, because she was always in terrific demand. It's just because she's inherited her family's horse farm. They have a really popular horse stable in Kentucky, and she inherited it from her parents, and so it's become a full-time job for her to run it, and she doesn't have time to do movies anymore because she has to take care of her family's business. But it's definitely not for a lack of movie offers, because she was I've never seen one of my stars blow up the way Melissa did, but now with Jessa, it's almost like history repeating itself.
Well, you know, that just goes to prove, and I'm not just saying that because it's you, but I'll tell you what, that just goes to prove how popular that you are and how awesome you are when it comes to making movies, because, you know, people see that you have actors and actors in your movie, and they're like, well, hey, I want her in my movie as well, and that's all in the test to you.
Yeah, well, it's always exciting to see, you know, some of my actors do good. Two of my biggest success stories are both male actors who've been in my movies. I had this one guy that was the principal male actor in Cannibal Hookers, the original one, named
Matt Berlusconi. And my movie was his very first movie. He had never acted in a movie before. And literally, he went directly from My Cheap Cannibal Hooker straight into Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5. So I've never seen an actor do such a huge career leap from the bottom of the industry onto a super cheap shot-on-video movie into an A-list huge, huge theatrical release the way Matt did. And then I had another actor that was in Vampire Cop named Ray McKinnon, who he's my only actor to win an Academy Award. He actually has an Oscar that he produced for he made his own live-action short film, and he actually won the Oscar that year for Best Live-Action Short Film. And then from the clout of being an Oscar winner, he was able to raise the money to direct his first feature. And because he was an Oscar winner, he was able to get big stars like Billy Bob Thornton to star in his first feature. And now he's just in one huge movie after another. He just did two projects back-to-back with Michael Keaton. He's the fourth billed star of the new Michael Keaton movie that Michael Keaton stars in and directs. He also did a Hulu miniseries with Michael Keaton called Dope Sick, and he's co-starred with George Clooney in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou for the Coen Brothers, and co-starred with Clint Eastwood in the movie A Perfect World, and co-starred with Warren Beatty and Bugsy. Just his IMDb page is just insane. So it's amazing to think how he started with me in Vampire Cop.
And, you know, the cool thing is Jess is actually going to be on our show June 10th at 9:15 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Oh, so you have got her booked, though. That's incredible.
Yep. she'll be on with us June 10th, and I can't wait to talk to her about a lot of her movies that, of course, because it's PG, we have to be careful about talking about some of her movies and some of her appearances, but I'm looking forward to chatting with her as well.
Yeah, you definitely should try to watch a few of her most important movies before you interview her. Like, Murder Size is definitely one of her most important films. That's one she's really proud of. And, and then Debbie Does Stevens has been available for a year. It came out on Blu-ray a year ago.
Well, one of my favorite movies that that I saw her in, because it's kind of interesting, because I'm a Sasquatch kind of guy. I saw her in Bigfoot Exorcist, and also Cannibal Something, and Sorority Babes were, and of course my all-time favorite, her Space Babes from Outer Space. And I can't wait to talk to her about those.
Oh, yeah. The Space Base was technically her first movie, but she has a very tiny part in it. And so then when I hired her right away to be in my remake of Cannibal Hookers, that was her first actual lead role, because I gave her the biggest role in that movie. And any time I put Jessa in one of my movies, it's always for the lead role. If you're going to hire Jessa, you've got to give her the lead. You don't hire her and give her a co-starring part. She's always got to be the main star. And the more I've gotten to know her, it makes it easier for me to write scripts for her, because the more I know of her personality and the things she likes and things she doesn't like, I like to put a lot of her personal things I've heard her say into the scripts to make it, you know, more fun for her to play. And so I really went to town on that, especially on Shark Exodus 2. That's probably the movie where the character Jessa plays is the closest to how she is in real life, where she's just naturally funny the way she says, and she likes to go on rants about how she's in love with wine and things like that. And things, whenever she really likes something like crab rangoons or wine, she can really just go on and on about how she loves it. And so I put a lot of that in her character in the movie when I wrote the script. So I like that movie, especially because the character she plays in Shark Exodus 2 is almost like playing herself.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, you have definitely went above and beyond a call of duty. I do appreciate you being with us and taking time out of your schedule, because I know you got a lot of stuff going on. And like I said, we got you booked 9 months ago. So I do appreciate you you being with us, and the great communication we had. We would definitely love to have you on again. Anytime you got a film upcoming that you want to promote,
let me know, and we will definitely help you promote anything you want to promote, especially if you want to put me in one of your films, even if it's a guy that gets taken out like to the first 3 minutes of the film. Everybody here in Fargo, North Dakota would rush to the theaters to see that. So there you go. There's your money right, back.
Oh, wow. So you're in North Dakota?
Yeah, where we have four seasons, winter, flood, road construction, and football.
Oh, well, at least you can run down to South Dakota and see Mount Rushmore.
Right. That's about 3 hours and 47 minutes from here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so, I'm about an hour from Nashville in the middle of Tennessee, right in the heart of tornado country. So I don't know what the tornado situation is where you are, but, yeah, where I live, it's like considered, the Bible Belt and the tornado belt.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, we don't really have tornadoes here. What we're famous for is mosquitoes in the summertime and blizzards in the wintertime.
Oh, wow. Now, if you hate blizzards and snow, Tennessee is a good place because we have almost no snow to speak of. This last winter, we had one day of snow, and it was pretty much all gone in 2 days. So that's usually, 2 days of snow is usually the most we ever get, but we were really lucky this last winter to just have one snow day, and then that was totally it. And then after that, we never had any more snow. That's how I like it, because I don't really prefer snow.
Well, here we're just the opposite. Here it snows in October and stays until May.
Now, here in Tennessee, we have fall weather all through the end of December, and winter doesn't kick in until January. But it's a yo-yo weather because all through January, in February, March, the weather are yo-yos. It may be cold one day, but it may be, 50 or 60 degrees the next. So it's every day isn't like winter, and there's almost no snow to speak of. So we have really, really super mild winters. It didn't used to be that way. So maybe it's part of global warming or whatever. But yeah, because in the 60s and 70s and 80s, we had decent winters with lots and lots of snow, but no more. Now it's very little snow, and that's fine with me because I don't like driving in snow. I've had too many wrecks in the snow.
Yeah, we don't like snow either, but we just kind of have to put up with it. It's kind of our forte. Well, I'll tell you what, sir, you have been so wonderful. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for being with us, and also most importantly, thank you for being a friend. And I would love to stay in touch with you anytime you need an egotistical maniac for one of your projects. I would definitely love to come work for you, and I'll pay you to put me in your movie.
Well, we're shooting our next movie in the fall, so just check with me around August, and I'll have a better idea of what our schedule is. But yeah, I'm looking to shoot this new movie, Leech Beach, in the fall.
Awesome. I would definitely love to work for you. Well, I'll tell you what, sir, you are awesome. Thank you for being with us, and you are super cool, and I'm glad that you decided to take time out of your schedule to be with us. You are awesome. Thank you.
I enjoyed it, and you all have a great evening, and have fun talking to Debbie.
All right, take care, bud.
All right, bye.
All right. Oh, that was awesome. What do you think of that one, Matthias? Was that cool or what, huh?
Very interesting.
And, what's interesting about, it does not look like Debbie's going to join us, unfortunately, because we only got 5 minutes left of the show before our theme song hits. But, what was interesting about tonight's show is everybody had a birthday this week. And that's never happened before, and I just realized that, and I didn't really plan that, but it just kind of happened that way. But unfortunately, we didn't get Debbie on, but we'll get her back on again, because usually when they agree to come on the show and they can't make it, they usually reschedule. So we'll definitely get her back on. So. Real quick here, we got about 2 minutes. What's your schedule like in the next couple weeks?
Next weekend I'm traveling to Wisconsin where I'm defending my APW World of the Week Championship against a man who I know all too well in Hotshot Danny Duggan. And then the next few weeks I'm actually going to have off of wrestling. And I do believe my next booking will be in the beginning or early or middle of June.
And you will be back with us next week, I would guess.
That that should be the plan, depending on if something happens or not.
All right, and for those of you who want to know who our guests are next week, you got to go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Monday Live Monday, and the guest list usually drops on Wednesday or Thursday. So we got a big show next week as well, so stay with us. Don't miss a single episode. So with that being said, remember, it's not goodbye, it's just good night. Love each other, care for each other, always be safe. Join us every week here on 89.1 Kens FM for Attitude Era Monday Live Monday. Until then, until next week, we will see you. Be well.
Mom thinks the 80s are gnarly, so here's another gnarly song from the 80s.
The following announcement has been paid for by the Attitude Era. Monday, live, Monday.
This is the Icon. Listen to 89.1 Kens FM Monday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Join me, Randy Hulkster, Matthias, and the Big Swing for the hottest interviews with interesting guests from film, literature, sports, and more.
The Attitude Era. Monday. Live. Monday.
Double time, some love and kiss, you'll be mine.